You're listening to an Economy Matters podcast produced by the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta.
The Federal Open Market Committee concluded a two-day meeting earlier today.
The pace of job growth has been strong.
Downside risks to the outlook for the economy.
Number of Fed officials.
Shadow banking system is large.
We've come a long way since the darkest day of the financial crisis.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Economy Matters podcast. I'm Tom Hinges, managing editor of the Atlanta Fed's Economy Matters magazine and your podcast host. And today I'm sitting down with one of our regular guests, Dominic Perviance, a subject matter expert in the Atlanta Fed Supervision and Regulation Division. Dominic is here today to discuss trends in housing and residential real estate, which of course has seen a great deal of activity in recent months. Now, Dominic, I say you're a regular guest on the podcast, but it's actually been a while since you've sat down with us, and a lot has happened in housing since we last spoke, so I'm looking forward to catching up on this topic, and it's really good to have you back in the studio.
It's good to be back, Tom.
Dominic, one of the storylines we heard earlier in the year was the shortage of existing home inventory and that shortage's effect on house prices. Is that still the case?
Very much so. So actually, I think where we are in housing and the inventory situation is pretty extraordinary. You think about it, we've, with interest rates going up since the beginning of last year, we've seen a pretty strong contraction in overall home sales. I think the most recent number has sales down about 16%. And at the trough, I think we had a year-over-year decline in home sales close to over 20%.
Wow.
And that decline is actually sharper than the decline that we saw in 2008, at least on a national level.
Right.
In several markets in our district with higher rates have obviously seen, you know, people priced out of the market and seen sales decline. And yet we've still seen home prices actually stabilize and start to trend upward over the past few months. And the culprit is, of course, the shortage of inventory. So inventory today is around we measure inventory levels by looking at the month supply of inventory typically. So that's how many months it would take to absorb the current amount of inventory given the current rate of absorption.
Right.
So even with absorption rates down, the month supply of inventory is around about 3 months, and it's stabilized around 3 months. And what's considered balanced is somewhere between 4 to 6. And so as long as there's this shortage of inventory, we're going to see some steady upward pressure on home prices. So last year, I think around June, home prices peaked at least the number that we have is around between 380 and 400. And it's come down about 10%. But recently, since the beginning of this year, home prices have started to trend upward. And I think if we go back to listen to our podcast we did about a year ago, I think we were probably talking about the potential impact of rising rates. And if you would have told me that even with rates going up from, you know, at the beginning of last year to 3.8% and now they're over 7%, if you'd have told me that in that scenario we would have home prices trended upward, I wouldn't have believed it. But definitely because of the shortage of inventory, nationally we're at 3 months. Some markets in our district, you know, are at 2 months or below. And so it's a pretty significant issue.
Right. Well, actually, you tee up my next question very nicely. Thank you. Because I did want to talk about mortgage rates. And that's a very obvious trend in housing right now and has been in the news a great deal lately. Mortgage rates recently topped 7% for a 30-year fixed mortgage. And I wanted to ask you, what effect do higher mortgage rates have on the housing market? I mean, apart from the obvious effect of making mortgages more expensive, of course, you know, I've heard the term lock-in effect used to describe this situation. What do you see in terms of mortgage rates and its effects on the market?
We can talk about affordability in a second, but the biggest impact of higher rates, at least on the housing market, number one, it is driving down affordability and is driving down demand. But one of the other effects, as you mentioned, is so-called lock-in effect. I've also heard the term golden handcuffs,
yeah,
which is new. I never heard that before. Essentially, what it means is if you have a mortgage that is a low-rate mortgage, you sort of are locked in as rates go up because you sort of disincentivized to sell. Because if you sold, not only would you have your home prices are much higher today, but you would also have a higher interest rate. So your mortgage payments would end up being higher. And so today, because, you know, rates went to, at their trough, they were below 3%, which is an historic low. And so many people refinanced their mortgages over the past few years that so much so that the over 50% of all mortgages in America have a sub 4% interest rate.
Wow.
And so if you refinanced or you bought a house and you're locked in at a low rate, when rates go to 6 or 7, you know, that's sort of a disincentive for you to actually sell. In many cases, some people aren't able to sell. So I remember a few years ago, I was in Dallas and I was taking an Uber to the airport, and my driver was explaining his situation, that he had a house that had a lot of equity, but he couldn't sell it because if he sold it, his housing costs would go up because he would have, number one, he would have to buy a more expensive house at a more expensive mortgage.
Right.
And so we tend to think higher rates make it less advantageous for people to buy, but it also makes it less advantageous for people to sell. In some situations, people aren't able to sell because whatever they buy is going to be far more expensive than what they currently have.
Yeah, and I'm sure what you heard in Dallas translates
all over the country. Yes.
But let's look at the situation closer to home. How has housing demand been in the Southeast compared to other regions in the country?
Well, the Southeast is doing a little bit better. Relatively speaking, if you're comparing to markets where people are coming from, like a New York or California, the Southeast is still more affordable. And if you're selling a house, if you're liquidating an asset in New York or California and you're moving to the Southeast, even though demand has declined year over year, we've seen a little bit more stabilization in demand than when you compare it to other markets. So markets like Atlanta or South Florida in particular has done very, very well, even with rates going up as high as they have. I mentioned, if you think about just the capacity of people to sell a house that is far more expensive in say California, they come to our market with a considerable amount of cash. What we would consider expensive based on what incomes are here are inexpensive if you're coming from a higher cost market. So overall, we've done fairly better than most regions in the country.
Yeah, I guess affordability is somewhat a matter of perspective.
You know, obviously houses are more expensive, but, you know, if you're paying cash, the interest rate isn't that much of an issue. And we've seen the share of cash sales, particularly in a market like South Florida, reach near 50%. And that's because, you know, so many people were able to cash out of existing homes that have a lot of equity.
Right. I wanted to follow up on a point you made earlier. You mentioned the shortage of existing homes and the problems it presents for buyers. What does that imply for the new home market? Is it reasonable for us to conclude that building new homes has slowed down in the face of higher mortgage rates?
Not at all. So it's sort of the opposite. So what's happened is because so many people are locked into a low rate, they can't sell their house, there's a shortage of existing home inventory. And that has actually been a boon for home builders because they have the ability to produce more homes. There's more demand. And so if you just look at the share of total inventory that historically was new home supply, it's normally about 14%. Today, it's somewhere around 25 to 30% of all inventory is now new inventory. And that's a pure byproduct of the lack of existing home inventory. And so builders today have increased supply, particularly spec inventory, in order to meet the demand.
So do builders have to take any unusual steps to move houses they build with the mortgage rates higher, or is that not necessary?
When rates began to rise last year, and through the second half of last year, we saw a pretty significant increase in incentives. And so builders are offering, you know, cash to buyers that they can sort of use at their discretion. It's gone down a little bit, but the use of incentives are still pretty well elevated. And the most often incentive that's used, obviously, is the buying down of interest rates. And so buyers are able to, you know, buy down rates and be able to still be able to afford to get in the house at a reasonable payment. And there's several different options that are available. Some options, you know, you can buy down the rate for maybe a year or two and then it adjusts to a normal rate. Or in some instance, you can buy down the rate for the length of the loan. And that's been a significant help, particularly in the entry-level side of the market where, you know, people a little bit more strained. In some instance, it's been this comes at a cost to the builder. I talked to one home builder a couple weeks ago, and he's sort of in that entry level for new homes is now about, you know, $300,000 to $400,000.
Wow.
Just given today's market. And he said that rate buy-downs are costing him about $35,000 per house. And if you think his average home price is about $350,000 to $400,000, that's about a 10% discount on the house. Of course, builders don't want to lower the price, and it's more advantageous for the home buyer to buy down the rate than actually have the price lowered. And so that's really what you're seeing in terms of demand and sales in the new home side. There's a considerable amount of incentives that are supporting the increase in new home sales, especially as there's a shortage of existing supply and all of that demand is going to new homes.
Oh, yeah. It's been so long since I've shopped for a house. I was not aware of this at all.
I'll add, it's pretty common rate buy-downs for new construction, but I was occasionally, this is what, you know, a real estate analyst do on the weekend. I go looking at open houses, just seeing what's on the market in my neighborhood. And one particular house I went to, you know, we toured the house, and as we were leaving, the agent said, well, you know, this isn't advertised, but, you know, if you decide to buy, the seller is willing to offer an interest rate buy down. And so it's pretty common for new homes. I don't know how common that is for an existing home seller to offer rate buy downs. I know this, you know, they, you know, pay for closing costs and things like that.
Right.
But, you know, that could end up being a significant discount to a buyer of an existing home that, you know, I'm not sure if that's common, but yeah, that's the first I've heard of it.
Yeah. You know, we've talked a lot about single family housing. I don't want to focus solely on single family housing because I know that multifamily housing is an important part of the housing market. And I want to know, what trends do you see in multifamily housing and how are they different from single family housing, if in fact they are different?
There are some differences, but, you know, in the same way that we sort of, since the 2008 crisis, we've underbuilt the single family home sector. If you just look at the household formation and job growth, didn't sort of match the level of building permits, both in single family side and the multifamily side. So we started this cycle, the pandemic, with a shortage of inventory, both in new homes and existing and multifamily. And so the shortage in multifamily units led to this big spike during the pandemic in rents. And so we saw last year rent growth over 20%, the same rate of increase we actually saw in home prices. Now that's come down a little bit. It's not as, it's the multifamily market isn't as hot as it was, you know, a year ago. We're not seeing, you know, the double-digit rent growth. We're seeing occupancies come down a little bit. A lot of that has to do with a lot more inventory that's being delivered in markets. And so the more inventory you have, it creates, you know, some downward pressure on rents. But, you know, it's the situation is still true that we're undersupplied in all kinds of houses, whether it's multifamily or single family. And that's leading to some pressure on housing costs for consumers.
Right. Dominic, you mentioned the pandemic, and that prompts a good question. You know, the optimists among us think we're in a post-pandemic period. Whether that's true or not is another matter. But do we still see reverberations in the housing market from the pandemic? And is that something you still see as an analyst?
You know, the builders I talk to will... their view of the market is it's returning to normal. So it's a return to normalcy in most cases. There's still some issues there. But the big impact, particularly the new home construction side during the pandemic, was supply chain disruptions. And we couldn't get materials to finish homes on time. And that led to a spike in prices. in most cases, supply chains have normalized, and we've seen some stability in costs. Now, costs are starting to rise today on the construction side, mostly because there's just a spike in activity. And so anytime activity spikes and, you know, we don't have the, you know, labor and other access to other materials, that causes prices to go up a little bit. But for the most part, you know, I would say it's normal in terms of the buyers. I would also say, you know, there is still some desire to move out of some markets and because the work from home and being able to work remotely is still sort of, I mean, that was a part of the work equation prior to the pandemic, but it's more so the case today.
Sure.
And so people are still interested if they can work remotely, if they can move to a cheaper market, they're going to do it. So that's one of the effects of the pandemic that I think is permanently with us. The ability to work from home or work remotely or not have to come to the office every day means that, you know, people can live further away from the office.
Right.
And the other aspect that we're still kind of contending with is the negative impact on the office market, because there's less demand for office space than there ever was.
That, that's a whole other episode of the podcast.
Yeah, that's a big issue.
Right. Okay, we're going to take a break for a moment to listen to this important message from the Atlanta Fed, and we'll come right back.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Economy Matters with housing expert Dominic Perviance. Download our Economy Now app from the Apple's iTunes Store or Google Play to keep up with changes in housing affordability, inflation, and more. Go to atlantafed.org for information.
And we're back with Dominic Perviance, who is here on the Economy Matters podcast talking about housing and the residential real estate market. Dominic, I want to pick back up by talking about housing affordability, which we touched on previously. I don't imagine the higher mortgage rates, which of course mean higher monthly payments, have helped affordability. What trends are you seeing in housing affordability, whether it's regionally or nationally?
Yeah, so when rates peaked last year, we saw, you know, affordability decline. In fact, housing affordability in about October last year reached its lowest level on record. The Atlanta Fed has an index that we track housing affordability called the Home Ownership Affordability Monitor. And our index looks at what the median income household can afford given the median price house and the current interest rate. And so we're looking at if the median income household were to purchase the median price house, what share of income would they need to expense per year in order to afford that house? And so 30% is considered affordable. October of last year, the share of income needed to afford the median price house jumped to about, I think at its peak was about 43% or just over 43%. And so when rates came down, we saw sort of the reprieve at the end of last year, rates came down, affordability improved a little bit. As of recently, we've seen affordability decline pretty significantly. Combination of rates over 7%, as well as home prices inching back up to their previous peak experienced last year. So today, if you make the median income, you're going to spend at least 43% of your income to afford the median price house. And so based on what I'm seeing, I wouldn't be surprised in the next couple months if we see affordability hit its lowest level on record, given where rates are going and where home prices are going. And just to put it in perspective, so the median income household makes about $75,000 a year nationally. In order to afford the median price house, which is about around 380 using our numbers, you would have to make at least $108,000 a year. And that's 43% higher than what the median income household actually makes. And so what's interesting to me, and this is obviously there's some cyclical effects of, you know, higher rates and higher home prices. But I am not sure how we really resolve this affordability issue long term. It used to be, you know, historically, if you make the median income, you can afford to buy the median price house almost in any market across the country. That's no longer the case anymore. In order for you to buy the median price house almost in any market, you have to make well above median income. And that's an extraordinary change for our economy. And it means that, you know, if you want to own a house, you're going to have to make above the median. If you want to, you know, enter the middle class, it's going to take more than just median income in order to achieve that. That's new.
Yeah, those are really striking numbers. Wow, when you put it like that, it really hits home. Well, let's consider all this, and let's consider elevated mortgages, you know, rising home prices, slowing wage growth. Are we perhaps looking, I don't want to be overly dramatic, but are we perhaps looking at an inflection point of some sort in the housing market? And, you know, what is recent home builder sentiment like?
In my view, I do think where we are is not sustainable. And you're right, if you combine higher home prices, higher mortgage rates, a slowdown in wage growth, all of those things together, one or two things could happen. Either we just see a contraction in demand as more people are just priced out of buying a house, or home buying becomes concentrated in higher income households. You know, you're actually seeing a combination of both of those trends today. So if you look at the average household that's buying a house, they have above the median income, they have stronger credit profiles, and they more than likely have some cash to put down to make a down payment to buy a house. And so it's not the case, as I mentioned before, that the typical median price, the median income household is going to be in the market for the average price house.
Yeah. Well, Dominic, you know, being in the Southeast as we are, you know, we're always aware of severe weather events, you know, whether it's hurricanes, droughts, what have you. And these weather events affect insurance premiums for homeowners, especially in coastal markets. We have a lot of coastal areas in our region. Can you discuss higher premiums and their role in housing market dynamics? I don't want to put you on the spot, but what do you foresee for housing in higher risk areas going forward?
Yes, so this is a significant issue, especially in our coastal markets like Florida and the coastal Alabama and Louisiana and Mississippi in our district. We've seen, as a result of the significant weather events, pretty sharp increase in insurance premiums in many of our markets. In some cases, insurance premiums have quadrupled over the past several years. And so part of our analysis of housing affordability is not just looking at the principal and interest payment. We intentionally include taxes and insurance because that, in many cases, is a prohibitive barrier for people to be able to afford a house.
Sure.
And a lot of it, the increase in insurance costs, in part driven by the exodus of insurance providers in some of these states. And so if you have fewer insurance providers, there's less competition and more of the risk is put on fewer providers, and that raises your premiums. There's also been some, in the case of Florida, an increased litigation around insurance. Has actually increased the potential cost and the risk that's associated with providers. And those things combined have led to higher premiums for not just home buyers, but also businesses in those markets. And it's a critical issue as we, you know, enter into hurricane season. You know, it's something that's certainly at the front of everyone's minds living in those markets that are most impacted by it.
Sure. Okay, well, thanks for that. Dominic, this has been a really great and thought-provoking conversation, and I want to thank you for being back in the studio to share your research and insights with us. It's always great to talk to you, and we'll have to have you back on soon.
Yes, thank you.
But before we finish today, I want to briefly mention the Home Ownership Affordability Monitor, which Dominic mentioned earlier. One of the data tools that Dominic oversees for the Atlanta Fed, it's always interesting, especially these days, and I encourage you to check it out. We'll have a link to it on our website. And that brings us to the end of another episode of the Economy Matters podcast. I'm Tom Hyges, managing editor of the Economy Matters digital magazine, and I hope you'll check out Economy Matters as well as the entire Atlanta Fed website at atlantafed.org. Thanks for spending time with us today, and let's get together again next month.
This has been a production of the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta. For more podcasts on this topic and others, please visit the Atlanta Fed's website at atlantafed.org.